Hello and welcome to episode 40 of the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers podcast. Once again, Boardman has got access to a microphone and will use it to be wrong on the internet. Once again, I am that Boardman and my name is Graham Lee. The topic of today's show is falsehoods programmers believe about computer programs. Now, there are a lot of falsehoods programmers believe articles. Indeed, I've already done one on a very similar topic. Falsehoods programmers believe about programming. The format of these articles is typically a list of problems that have been encountered in computer programs where the programmer has made an assumption that does not hold. So there is one called Falsehoods Programmers Believe About Dates, which it talks about like whether dates monotonically increase one day at a time would be a example of a flaw, because there have been cases where that didn't happen. Or falsehoods programmers believe about addresses, talking about, you know, delivery, mailing, residential addresses, containing examples of assumptions that programmers have made about the way that addresses work that have counterexamples that, you know, do not hold. Now, Falsehoods Programmers Believe About Programming was an article I wrote in which I looked at assumptions that I have seen programmers make in the writing of a program. What I didn't do was provide counterexamples. And, you know, well, I provided them in some cases. So I said, you know, for example, compiled languages are always fastest is a falsehood that programmers believe, and I linked to an article about situations in which Java is faster than C. And indeed, I have worked on a project before where we had a Java library that was faster than an equivalent C library. But a lot of these things didn't have counterexamples, and people found that frustrating. They said, yeah, there's no sort of value to this article because it just says this thing and then doesn't like display evidence. Now, what I was hoping was that people would sort of feel the challenge of, well, I do believe this and you're telling me it's a falsehood, I'll go and learn about it. So, for example, I said it is a falsehood programmers believe about programming that their program is not going to be the target of a hacker. Hopefully that would lead people to, you know, want to learn a bit more about information security and about the motivations of hackers. And the fact that, you know, blended threats exist and you can use one program to gain access to the assets held by another program and so on. But that wasn't what happened. People instead just got angry. You know, if you're feeling cynical, and I am because it's quite late on a Sunday evening, you could say that the sort of Stack Overflow generation of programmers are used to seeing the question and the answer next to each other with the answer in a readily pastable format. But, you know, even if they ignore the requirements of the license under which the argument under which the answer is shared, they can at least copy it into their own programs. And I wasn't doing that. I was providing the source of the questions without even providing the questions themselves, let alone the answers. That is an absurdly cynical take, and so, you know, not necessarily true. Now, I want to go the other way with this episode of the show. I want to take one idea and run with it far too far. You've probably noticed that this is the way that this show tends to work. So there's going to be one falsehood in this episode, and that is based on another series of articles of which there has been a long heritage. There are many articles with the title X Considered Harmful. So the falsehood in this episode, it is a falsehood programmers believe about computer programs that go-to statements are harmful. Now, they're evidently considered harmful, or at least they were considered harmful by Dijkstra, right? Well, that's not what he wrote. Dijkstra wrote, this Edgar Dijkstra, who was a very mathematically inclined computer science professor in the Netherlands, wrote a letter to the editor of the communications of the ACM, the Association for Computing Machinery. The editor at the time was Niklas Wirth, who is Danish, I think, and was working at ETH Zurich, the creator of the Pascal programming language, Modular 2, the Oberon system, and so on. And Dykstra's letter, so this wasn't even a peer-reviewed paper. This was just like an unreviewed opinion piece, a letter to the editor of a somewhat scholarly magazine, but not a journal. He didn't write go-to statements considered harmful. That was the title of the letter, as applied by the editor, Niklaus Wirth, to the content of the letter. Now, people still sort of quote the idea go-to statements considered harmful all the time. They attribute it to Dykstra, as we've seen. It's actually Wirth's idea. But you know, clearly someone considered go-to statements harmful, and you know, that was the inference that Wirth made based on Dykstra's argument. What did Dykstra actually say? Well, he opened with quite a bold assertion that he had for a long time observed that the quality of programmers is a decreasing function of the density of go-to statements in the programs they produce. Now, we obviously have to situate this at that point in history, because we look now and programmers don't write go-to statements at all. So you could, you know, you would come to the conclusion that most programmers are all equally good if this was your quality metric. That probably isn't true. And so, yeah, we realise that this is a situated statement. It occurs at a moment, and it is of that moment. So, digging in more detail, my first remark, i.e. Dykstra's first remark, is that although the programmer's activity ends when he has constructed a correct program, that's Dykstra being sexist, not me, the process taking place under control of his program is the true subject matter of his activity. For it is this process that has to accomplish the desired effect. It is this process that in its dynamic behaviour has to satisfy the desired specifications. So what Dykstra is saying is that the program is not the artifact that we care about in programming. It is the workflow, the process that is enabled by the program. And that is already, you know, perhaps a sort of second falsehood. Were I to want to cover more than one falsehood, it would be that a falsehood programmers believe about programming is that their programs are valuable. Let's move on. Dykstra continues, yet once the program has been made, the making, in quotes, of the corresponding process is delegated to the machine. So the output that is useful, the meaningful purpose of a programming activity, is the process that that program enables. But the programmer stops at the point where they have completed the program. It is then left to the computer to run the program, i.e. to execute the process. Now, is that true? Is it actually true to say that the programmer's activity ends when he, in Dykstra's words, has constructed a correct program? Well, I would say that sort of belies Dykstra's background in mathematics. He's labouring under the idea that you can describe a mathematical expression, formula, whatever you want to say, for the program that you want to construct, i.e. its specification can be precisely encapsulated in a collection of logical statements, and that the programmer's task is to implement that specification, i.e. once the dynamic behaviour of the program is to realise the model that was expressed mathematically at the start, the programmer can go home and they have no business left. It's up to the ops people to run this program. That's the bit where the making of the corresponding process is delegated to the machine. Now, is even that true? Well, it kind of is in batch programming. You know, if you have even if you have a sort of payroll tabulation software where you're number of hours each employee worked, hourly wage of the employee in, multiplied one by the other, wage packet comes out the other side. That seems like you're sort of delegating the process to the computer, but all of those inputs come from somewhere, right? Yeah, there's some HR department who are deciding who gets what salary. At some point, people get raises, or they get, you know, knocked down a grade or whatever, and their wages change, their hourly rates change. Someone does some overtime, the number of hours they work changes. So even in that sort of very simple system, the tax code changes, the contributions to their pensions change, so on and so forth. So actually, the execution of the process, the making of the corresponding process, is not delegated to the machine. It is a collaborative effort between the machine, the operators, and, you know, the various people who are users, or more broadly, stakeholders in that system. Much more so in online programs than in batch programs. Many more collaborators, including other systems, which also have their own users and stakeholders. And so, you know, in the idea of the iPencil paper on economics, you know, where does the end of this system actually occur? Where is the boundary for any computer program? It could well be global in scope. So that was, you know, one part of this, is that Dijkstra's idea is that we have to, like, write a program, and when we're done, we can go home. Well, that kind of, it obviates 50% of the problem with go-to statements, because the problems can be that the program is hard to write, or that the program is hard to understand. Well, like, if it's hard to understand, it doesn't matter, because my job was done at the point that it was correct. So as long as we get there, we're done. Now, we can ask about how much time it takes me to get there, like what errors I encounter along the way, what, you know, quality problems that exist. But because we believe that we're done when we go home, there's no sort of ongoing maintenance. There's no, like, literary review of this code. And so, you know, it doesn't really matter from that perspective what somebody else did, you know, and why then is Dijkstra worrying? If he finds it easier to write code without go-to statements, he should just do that. But he actually opened with the idea that the quality of programmers is a decreasing function of the density of go-to statements in the programs they produce, which means that he's reading their code and he's, like, trying to understand it with or without its go-to statements. And so the programmer's job isn't done, because there's, like, the critique, interpretation, and improvement of the existing programs. So there's a bit of internal inconsistency here. Here's the next quote from Dijkstra. I'm going to, like, jump quite a long way through the letter now. It's a very short letter, link in show notes. The unbridled use of the go-to statement has an immediate consequence that it becomes terribly hard to find a meaningful set of coordinates in which to describe the process progress. Usually, people take into account as well the values of some well-chosen variables. But this is out of the question, because it is relative to the progress that the meaning of these values is to be understood. With the go-to statement, one can, of course, still describe the progress uniquely by a counter counting the number of actions performed since program start, viz. A kind of normalized clock. The difficulty is that such a coordinate, although unique, is utterly unhelpful. In such a coordinate system, it becomes an extremely complicated affair to define all of those points of progress where, say, n equals the number of persons in the room minus one. That's the end of that quote by Dijkstra. And I'll just explain what he means, the bit at the end. It becomes an extremely complicated affair to define all those points of progress where, say, n equals numbers of persons in the room minus one. He's got this example of a program that one might want to write where the program's job is to count the number of people in a room. So you start with the room being completely empty and a counter zero. When you see someone enter, add one to the counter. Now, if that is his complete specification of how to count people in a room, then he probably hasn't been to many parties. But the point he wants to focus on is that there's a potential for a gap between seeing someone enter and incrementing n. So, you know, someone comes in, then the computer detects that, and then it increments n. Can we understand all of the situations in the program where when I go to read n, it actually gives me the result n minus 1, i.e. where there is one more person in the room than there is accounted for in my program. And what he's saying is that with go-to statements, that becomes potentially intractably difficult, that because I can't just look at the code and say, right, what has happened up to here? You know, what's the value of n, and what changes have there been? What expression am I running? Because I could have got to that position in the code through an arbitrarily complex history, and I can't sort of break the history up into manageable chunks, which is the topic of his book, A Discipline of Programming. You know, I can't break it up into chunks because any of the rest of the program can have run and then go-to'd to this point that I am at now. So if the only thing I have is the history, and the history is incredibly complex to understand, then the program is incredibly complex to understand. This paper is still, you know, widely quoted today, and usually for such lofty purposes as arguing that, you know, no real programmer worth their salt, you know, no true Scotsman of programming, no non-quiche eater of programming would write a go-to statement, and a project with a go-to statement in it is laughably absurd and should not be taken seriously. So here's your first bit of homework, is to go and understand your operating system, whichever operating system your computer runs, and the number of go-to statements it contains. If you find that it is zero, please do email grahamlee@acm.org, because I believe that, you know, with some very few and very unlikely exceptions, very unlikely to be listening to a podcast on, you'll find that there are go-to statements. There are definitely go-to statements in the Linux kernel, in the BSD kernels, in the Mach kernel, in macOS 10. If you know whether there are any in Windows 10, if that's what you're listening on, then, you know, be my guest. Please tell me how many there are. I'm guessing the number is not zero anyway. So, does this idea hold up? Does this statement that programmers are worse at writing programs when they use more go-to statements actually bear up? Did anyone bother measuring this? Or is this folklore dressed up as mathematics? Is this a scary story that Dijkstra decided to tell that has left us all worried about the hobgoblins in our code, in the spectre that is haunting our computer, without actually having any basis? Well, luckily, some people did actually do the work, and we can look at a paper that I'll link. It refers to many other papers where the studies actually exist, but it's, you know, much more accessible to read this summary, and it's actually quite an enjoyable paper throughout. B.A. Shields, The Psychological Study of Computer Programming, in which he says that, like, all of these arguments, so people like Kernighan, who are writing about you know, the style of computer programming, or even Knuth, like, you know, with, like, literate programming and so on, or Dijkstra, who are writing about, like, mathematical arguments for particular approaches to programming, they're not actually making arguments about literary style or about mathematics. They're making arguments about psychology. If Dijkstra is saying you will do your programming job better if you do it this way, then that's not a mathematical argument. You know, maths is a collection of constructions of logical rules and then information about whether a statement is, like, true or valid or even constructible within those logical rules. It is a, you know, a tool for exploring syllogisms and tautologies and paradoxes and negations and, like, you know, logical statements. It is not a tool for understanding whether someone will be better or not at their job. Maths can be applied, But maths itself cannot tell you whether maths is applicable. So Dijkstra's argument is psychology dressed up as mathematics. It is programmers will perform their programming task better if they eschew go-to statements. And my reason for saying that is some maths. Actually, the maths is not in the letter. It's in books like The Discipline of Programming. So then, you know, Scheele goes and looks and asks, well, is this psychological statement actually true? Has anyone tried to verify this? We already know that the answer is yes, because I said that before. So he comes up with like three experiments, empirical studies, which are basically sort of the early genesis of a field called empirical software engineering. In the first one of these studies, and again, the references to these are in the Scheele paper, and so I'm just going to like link to the Scheele paper and you can follow these studies up yourself. Participants were given a specification for how to cook vegetables based on their initial condition. So it might be, is this vegetable green? Yes, well then you have to boil it. Is it, if it's not green, then it, does it have this property? If so, then you have to grill it, or otherwise you have to fry it, something like that. So they're given that specification, which obviously can be expressed as a computer program, and their job is to translate it into a program. And they're told, you know, one of two things to do. One is to use the structured condition expression only, so if then else, or they're told to use the go-to, i.e. test and jump if it's true, form of constructing the program. And what they measure is the time to correct implementation and the errors encountered. And what they find is that the conditional statements were better than the go-to statements in this condition. Now, if it's time to correct implementation, then tracking errors encountered is kind of immaterial, because like, as long as you converge on a correct implementation, it doesn't matter what happened along the way. But yeah, look into that paper some more if you want to understand how they actually sort of used those variables in the study. Then they did a second one, and they did effectively the same experiment. So you've got this this short list of conditions about what vegetables need cooking in what way, and you've got to turn it into a program. But this time they had three conditions, and the first one was the if then else, and the second one was test and jump. So we've got the, you know, the structured conditional statement, and we've got the unstructured go-to statement. And then they tried a third variant of a structured conditional statement, which is called if not end. And the way it works is if x, sequence of statements, not x, sequence of statements, end x. So the condition is repeated at each of the statements in the what would otherwise be the if then else expression. And what they found was that on the metrics they were using, the time to correct program and errors encountered, the new version, the if not end version, was better than both the go-to version and if then else. So why don't languages use that one? Why are we still sort of stuck on this mediocre solution of like the if then else, or else as found in, you know, like C, Python, Ruby, blah blah blah? Why haven't we used this empirically superior construct? If what we're saying is that there's, you know, some sort of valid basis to the argument that go-to statements are worse because they make it harder to write correct programs, we found an even easier way to write correct programs than the one we're currently using, shouldn't we be picking this more optimal solution? They then did a third experiment, where this time they're not looking at program construction, they're looking at program comprehension. You have a program that implements the algorithm we've talked about preparing vegetables, and you're given a set of initial conditions and you have to say what the outcome is, and they're measuring whether you got the outcome correct and how long it took you to understand the program and come to that conclusion. Using all three variants, so the if then else, the if not end, and the test jump i.e. go to. Once again, the go-to version was worse than the other two, which seems so far like a compelling case for the go-to being harmful, for it actually being harder both to write and to read software when it contains the go-to statement or the conditional jump statement. But could it be something else? And the authors of these studies theorized that it could be the way that the programs are formatted, because if you've got condition if true jump to L1, other condition if true jump to L2, other condition jump to L3, those tend to all come at the hard left margin of your source code. Whereas if you've got if X, if Y, then do A, else do B, and so on, then you end up with a sort of pyramid of code formatting which could help interpret the flow, particularly in a language such as Python, which evidently wasn't written at the time that this experiment was done. When you enforce that white space, that indentation, then you enforce that layout. And so if the layout is the thing that is giving the hint, not the statements themselves, then you could use languages like Python that enforce that layout. You could use that kind of layout with go-to statements. You could do the experiment where you lay out programs in that way and find out whether people find them easier to understand. Nobody did that, so we don't know what the effect of this confounding factor was. But what Scheel did was to look at the data and look at these results in a bit more detail and notice that there's a much bigger effect of practice effect than there was on language choice, or the choice of construct in which to express this program. So maybe what you need to do is not worry about whether your programmers are using go-to statements or not, but give them a 2-day seminar in how to write a program rather than a 1-day seminar in how to write a program, and then they'll be way better whichever condition they choose to write the program. The next part of Scheel's discussion looks at other researchers who compared go-to statements with other more sophisticated control statements. So not just conditionals, like if then else, but loops like for or while. Now, in this more complex case, they actually found no evidence of superiority. No evidence of difference between the go-to statement and the complex structured programming statement, or rather the sophisticated structured programming statement. The only clear evidence that these researchers uncovered was that if you deliberately, chaotically organize a program, it becomes harder to interpret than a program that is laid out in some rational fashion, whether that layout uses go-to statements or uses structured programming controls. A logically organized program with or without go-to statements seems to be just as easy to write, read, and debug, whether it's using go-to statements or not. And randomly or chaotically organizing a program is pathological and you probably shouldn't do that. That's the conclusion. Not go-to statements are considered harmful. Not go-to statements are harmful. But illogical organization is harmful. Of course, one factor here is that if you're comparing the comprehension rates, or rather the construction rates, depending on the experiment, of people who are using conditionals and people who are using jumps, then you're situating your experiment in a context where people use conditional statements and they use jumps. These days, nobody has learned jumps because everybody has learned that go-to statements are considered harmful. And so it may be that nowadays a go-to statement would be harmful just because we have been training people in such a way that they don't know what it is or how it works or how to comprehend a program that contains it. So we may have got into a self-fulfilling prophecy where the go-to statement is now harmful because we spent so long believing that a go-to statement is harmful. Now, what typically happens at this point in the discussion of a truism in computing being found to not hold water is that people start asking, well, what are these empirical software engineers doing anyway, and why do I have to believe that their results are valid to my real and much more important work? So that's a valid line of reasoning. It leads to another falsehood programmers believe about programming, actually multiple falsehoods that programmers believe about programming related to empirical software engineering. And I did promise that I would only cover one falsehood in this episode, so those will have to wait for another time. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. You can contact me about anything in this or anything you'd like me to talk about or ask me anything or whatever crosses your mind. I'm Graham Lee at acm.org and I'm on Twitter. I was Lee G. IWASLEEG. And if you really like the podcast and would like to support it, I have a Patreon, patreon.com/IAMLEEG, IAMLEEG. And your support would be greatly valued. Thank you very much, and I will talk to you again soon.